Support for NPR podcasts comes from Bose. Bose sound in a portable iPod speaker system. Learn more about the SoundDock portable music system at Bose.com.
What a blazing impact Fletcher Henderson must have made. There's a freedom of expression there in the individual players while soloing and while playing in the section, but it's together and precise. It's like everybody was just letting go.
The first thing that needs to be said about Fletcher Henderson was that he was a pioneer in the field of jazz. He was there right at the very beginnings, and in he plunged and developed into one of the greatest arrangers, one of the most important people in the whole history of jazz.
At its best, the Fletcher Henderson Orchestra was more than just a band. It was an inspiration. Genius grew in that band, with talents like Louis Armstrong, Coleman Hawkins, Roy Eldridge, and composer Don Redman. Fletcher Henderson was a big band pioneer. The groups of horns, the full harmonies, the back and forth between soloist and the full ensemble. The jazz orchestra came of age with Fletcher Henderson. And they swung like no band before, and few ever since. His band became a touchstone for all others, and big bands around the world are still following his lead 70 years later. I'm Nancy Wilson. On this edition of Jazz Profiles, we celebrate the life and music of Fletcher Henderson, whose legacy as a composer, arranger, and band leader is a cornerstone of jazz. Writer and jazz historian Albert Murray.
I think that Fletcher is crucial. Was a major influence on the development of the jazz band. That is somewhere between 10 and 18 piece jazz band. Now, anytime you deal with the, what I call a fully orchestrated blues or jazz statement, you're going to be dealing with a sound that's related to what he was doing.
Despite their achievements, the musicians in the Fletcher Henderson band didn't think of it as art. They were a dance band, trying to play the most exciting music around for themselves and especially for the audience. Saxophonist Coleman Hawkins was one of the original members of the Fletcher Henderson Orchestra and stayed with the band for a decade.
We used to play so much music, we used to call it, it's more like stomping or something. You know what I mean? It was a little more heavier jazz than anybody else seemed to be playing to me, you know? That sound it used to have, you know, and it was, we used to rock those walls in there. The place would shake when we played the thing. It was, you know, it was full and I don't know, it had something else that they never were able to record.
The Fletcher Henderson Band was famous. They were on radio coast to coast and toured nearly as far. You could hear their records in bars, barbershops, stores, and in theaters between the movies. Generations of musicians and fans were inspired by their special sound. One was clarinetist Russell Prokop. He played with Fletcher Henderson in the 30s, but he first saw the group when he wandered into a dance hall as a boy. When the band started up, he couldn't believe his ears.
I just stood there with my mouth open all night. I didn't move away from the front of the bandstand. Oh, I never heard anything like that in my life. And I think right then I decided what I was going to do with my life. Right then. You couldn't tell me anything about school. You couldn't tell me anything about work or anything. That was it. From then on, I just dreamed music.
In the 30s and 40s, the swing era, everybody was listening to big bands. And the music of that era grew out of Fletcher Henderson's orchestra. In addition to his own band, Henderson composed for Benny Goodman's orchestra, which was at the heart of the swing craze. Henderson's concepts about jazz orchestras allow for an amazing range of musical colors and moods, which are still being explored today. Composer and band leader, Frank Foster.
I believe a lot of today's writers don't even know they've been influenced by that, but they're writing according to certain principles that Fletcher Henderson, Don Redman established, myself among them. Now that we're talking about it, I'm wondering what came before Fletcher Henderson? I mean, where'd he get his stuff from?
Fletcher Henderson was born in Cuthbert, Georgia, before there was jazz, on December 18, 1897. His father was a dedicated school principal, and his mother taught music. She started him on piano at age 6. His brother Horace, in this 1975 interview, recalls his parents' effort to encourage him to play.
My father and mother, they used to lock Fletcher up when he was 6 or 7 and make him practice. And they would hear the noise, and after a while there was a silence. And they'd open the door, and there he was, curled up in the middle of the floor asleep. My father knew about the piano and how heavy you should play on that piano. He'd tell you that you're hitting it too heavy. He would tell him he knew the fundamentals of it.
Fletcher Henderson stuck with it, and by the time he was in high school, he was a fine pianist. He went on to college in Atlanta, where he studied science and put together his first band, playing popular dance tunes. Fletcher's brother Horace, who later went on to his own successful career as a band leader and arranger, was inspired by his older sibling's talent.
He would come home about twice a month, I guess, and he'd play piano, which we still have in Georgia with my sister. And he would just sit down and play, and we would have selections to call, and he would play anything. This just amused me, and I said, one day I'm going to try and do this, you know.
I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to a tribute to Fletcher Henderson on NPR's Jazz Profiles. Fletcher Henderson moved up to New York City in 1920 to study chemistry at Columbia University. His father always dreamed one of his sons would be a scientist. But when Fletcher got to New York, he deferred graduate school and took a job playing songs in a music store. From there, he moved to Black Swan, one of the first black-owned record companies. The blues were hot then, and Fletcher backed star singers on some classic Black Swan recordings. During one of the sessions, singer Ethel Waters stopped Henderson and told him to loosen up and sent him to listen to piano rolls by James P. Johnson. The lesson must have worked because he joined Waters on this 1922 recording of Kind Lovin' Blues.
Some people doubt me, most talk about me, just to down my name. Although Eve was the first to sin, that don't say all women the same, but we must suffer and oftentimes bear the blame. All I want is real kind loving, someone to whisper loving words to me. For I've been neglected, downright rejected. Won't some sweet daddy hear my plea? Once let me love him, he'll like it, I will guarantee.
Ethel Waters singing Kind Lovin' Blues with Fletcher Henderson on piano. Pretty soon, instead of just playing in the recording session bands, he was directing them. Gunther Schuller.
And out of that evolved the idea, well, maybe we don't have to do everything with singers, maybe we can just do it purely instrumentally. And little by little, he gathered a group of players around him who were then the nucleus of the later Fletcher Henderson Orchestra, amongst which were very important musicians like Coleman Hawkins.
And I only knew Fletcher a short time before then. I'd made a few records with him. You know, it was sort of quite a bit like they do today. You know, you get together. He had a certain bunch he'd pick out to go down and make these record dates, you know. And then he finally organized more or less. He added a few more pieces to the combination he was using for the recordings, you know.
Just after he formed his first band, Henderson met his musical partner, a gifted young saxophonist and arranger named Don Redman. Redman had been a child prodigy. He had graduated college at 15, and he could play any instrument in the band. Before long, Redman was writing most of the orchestra's arrangements. At first, the Fletcher Henderson Orchestra sounded a lot like other dance bands. They made this recording of My Sweetie Went Away in 1923. Henderson and Don Redman were searching for an innovative, dynamic kind of jazz group, but they weren't exactly sure what it was. It took them just a few years to figure it out, and when they did, they had a new kind of jazz orchestra. Here they are, just a year and a half after My Sweetie Went Away, performing Don Redman's arrangement of Copenhagen. Fletcher Henderson Orchestra performing Don Redman's arrangement of Copenhagen in 1924. Until the early 20s, ragtime and formulaic dance bands were the most popular music in America. But Henderson and Redman were working to change all that as they pioneered their new big band concept, Gunther Schuller.
Ragtime had an entirely different instrumentation than jazz later took on. I mean, ragtime had a flute, it had a clarinet, it had a tuba, it had strings. Well, that was a classical instrumentation. That was like a mini symphony orchestra. So that when we say that Don Redman invented the jazz orchestra, that's really true, because there wasn't anything. The only other thing there was the true New Orleans Collective Improvisational Ensemble, which consisted of one clarinet, one cornet, one trombone, and a rhythm section. So seven pieces standard. But what Don Redman invented was a much larger orchestra by taking each of those timbres, that is to say, a wind instrument, a woodwind instrument, in effect, a clarinet, and two brass instruments, and just expanded that at first into, I think it was three trumpets and one trombone and two saxophones. Then it became three saxophones, and then it became four. Why did they expand? Well, at first he was dealing only, let's say he had two trumpets and one trombone and two saxophones. That equals five voices. So if you wanted to make a harmony, you had five notes that you could deal with. And there obviously was a hankering to use more notes, not just five notes, use 10 notes. They wanted to make the sound bigger and fuller and richer and more colors.
Until the mid-20s, the melody of a song was usually played by a single instrument in a band. But in Fletcher Henderson's group, a whole section of brass or reeds would play it together in carefully worked out harmony. Henderson and Don Redman arranged the songs by writing out all the parts, and the musicians had to play them precisely, while also sounding relaxed and swinging. Henderson got the best musicians he could and rehearsed for long hours. Horace Henderson.
He rehearsed the band so hard on an arrangement until when he finished rehearsing his band, you knew that new arrangement for memory. This is how thorough he was. And then he could hear a mistake, even if it was a whisper. And I learned a lot of things from him, like distributing a chord, you know, and he would tell the trumpet his note, you know, tell the alto his note. And then after he would give him those notes, this wasn't written on paper, this was a quickie, you know, and then he would directed and hit it, man, it would sound like a symphony.
Of the Fletcher Henderson Orchestra knew they were part of something special. In fact, the band was so admired by other musicians that once you played in it, your reputation was set. And the band members loved to play, so much so that when their regular show was over, they'd go right out and find another place to play, often ending up at Coleman Hawkins' house in Harlem.
So we used to come up to my house practically every night. We used to sit there and drink all night and play. This used to go on all night long, this and the records and eating and talking, back to playing again and this. That was every night. We'd sit up there and fool around until 2 and 3 and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. No sleep. 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We got to finish this thing.
With Redman and Henderson's new band concept, the brass and saxophone sections could be used as two distinct voices, calling back and forth in a musical conversation. You can hear this exchange in the Fletcher Henderson Orchestra's version of Shanghai Shuffle, recorded in 1924. Fletcher Henderson Orchestra performing Shanghai Shuffle. During a stop in New Orleans in 1922, Henderson saw Louis Armstrong playing in a club. He was so taken by the young trumpeter that he asked him to join his orchestra right on the spot. After Armstrong went to Chicago to work with King Oliver for 2 years, he finally did join Fletcher Henderson because he knew this band was different, as he recalled in this 1956 interview.
I noticed a whole lot of things when I went to New York to join Fletcher Henderson's band. I noticed they had big arrangements and everybody was playing their parts. Those records, I think, will always bring happiness to me because that was my first big band, and that's the first band where I had to read music. Before that, it was our ear, you know.
Armstrong's genius had a huge impact on the rest of the band. Albert Murray.
His sense of time, his sense of pulse, his sense of beat, the magnificence of his tone, his imagination, turned a lot of guys around because they didn't know that could come out of a trumpet. What Lewis did on that single instrument affected the way people thought about the music as a whole, and especially people who were writing it.
Armstrong was a model for the rest of the Henderson Orchestra for his brilliant and expressive solos, as you can hear in this Don Redmond arrangement of Sugarfoot Stomp, recorded in 1924. With Louis Armstrong on trumpet and the tight arrangements of Don Redmond, the Fletcher Henderson Orchestra reaches new heights of popular and creative success. But fortune proved to be elusive, as we're about to hear. I'm Nancy Wilson, and you're listening to Jazz Profiles, a tribute to bandleader and composer Fletcher Henderson from NPR, National Public Radio. By the mid-20s, the Fletcher Henderson Orchestra was famous all over the country. Clarinetist Russell Prokop later played in the Henderson Orchestra. In this 1979 interview, he recalls that the group's records were everywhere.
I remember those records. They used to cost 75 cents. I used to go in the store and ask the man, I said, do you have any Fletcher Henderson records? And he said, yeah, and I just buy it. I wouldn't even listen to it. Louis, you're good enough for me, I just buy it. Most people's houses, you know, you went to, had Fletcher Henderson's records. I never got the figures, but Fletcher Henderson must have sold a hell of a lot of records. Somebody made a hell of a lot of money. That's right, you believe that. Because everywhere, the whole damn neighborhood was playing Fletcher Henderson's records.
Writer and historian Albert Murray remembers that even in far-off Alabama, the sound of the Henderson Band was all over town. in homes and businesses, anywhere people hung out.
If I hear some of the old Fletcher Hendersons, it makes me a little boy going into the main department store in Mobile, or sitting in the theater waiting for the lights to go out, they would be playing these things. See, when I was 10 years old, I heard Fletcher Henderson's Stampede, but that's 1926. So that Fletcher Henderson was a part of what baseball was like. It was there, it was influencing, people listened to it.
By the late 20s, everything was coming together musically. The band simultaneously sounded supple and relaxed, and also precise and disciplined, like in this 1927 recording of White Man's Stomp. Fletcher Henderson Orchestra performing White Man's Stomp. As Coleman Hawkins recalls, when the band played Don Redman's arrangements, the house went wild.
No matter how musical he arranges right today, at that time, Don could make some very good gut bucket arrangements. We used to call them gut bucket. It's another name for rock and roll, actually. Because that's what they were doing. They were rocking and rolling, but they're a little bit more musical, you know. The feeling, you know. Rock and roll with a little music behind it. That's what I'm trying to say.
Other musicians and band leaders were knocked out by the Henderson Band. They'd come to his shows with notepads, frantically jotting down the band members' solos, and then making arrangements from them for their own bands to play. Coleman Hawkins solos on this famous Fletcher Henderson composition, Stampede. As Coleman Hawkins recalls, sometimes the loose feel of the band became too relaxed.
Now, Fletcher's band used to have some of the worst starts that you ever heard of in your life. We'd be starting off, half the band would be looking for the music. All kinds of things like that, but in person, who cares about that? Nobody pays that in the mind. You don't hear that part. When we got down to the crisis, or when it got down to the core of the music, I mean, when it's supposed to be sounding good, everybody was together and everybody was playing like mad. And that's what you hear, you see what I mean? And the endings and like that, you know. But the band was a bit sloppy, you know what I mean? But it had something else. It had a good sound and a good beat and everything, you know what I mean? It lacked a lot of precision. Wherein Duke's band was loaded with precision, they didn't have that, couldn't give you that good in-person sound. Maybe sometimes you can get too precise. Maybe you lose something when you get like that, you know?
Duke Ellington called the Fletcher Henderson Orchestra the party band, They ate and drank and made a lot of music, and they were always playing jokes on one another. The musicians affectionately nicknamed arranger Don Redman Tater because he was short and a bit round. They called Henderson Smack, not because of drugs, but because of his reputation with the ladies. Horace Henderson recalled how one night one of the band members spotted a girlfriend of Fletcher's out in the crowd.
Fletcher was going with a girl in Chicago named Muriel Zollinger. She was quite a beautiful girl, you know. And one time the band was playing, and Muriel was dancing with a guy, and, you know, he was dancing a ballad. You know how they get real tight, you know. And one of the smart alecks in the band said, "Hey, Smack, look at that guy, how he's holding your girl, man. He's about to take your girl." So Fletcher, just like he always is, cool and calm, he said, "Well, I tell you, if he can take her, I never had her in the beginning." Man, you could hear a pin drop then, see, because it wasn't a joke anymore, see. So they didn't play very many more jokes on Smack after that.
Fletcher Henderson was a disciplined man and a hard worker, but lax as a leader. Horace Henderson remembers one typical night when the band was playing up in Massachusetts, and it was 20 minutes before the gig, and the band hadn't shown, except for him and Fletcher.
I was worried to death. I went outside and was trying to look down the highway to see if I could see anybody, you know. I'd go back in, and Fletcher's sitting at the piano just fooling around, playing. Well, about a quarter of nine, here comes Coleman Hawkins in. About 10 minutes of nine, here comes the drummer. 10 minutes of nine now with drums to set up. John Kirby, the bass player, was such an erratic road sign reader that he went through the town. So he got in about 9:20. Finally, about 10 o'clock, we had a full band. And the guys played after they got there so hard. And he never reprimanded the guys for it. He was too easy on them. But I've often heard him say, well, you don't ride your musicians. You know, you tell them what you want, and then if they don't do it, then you try to look for a capable replacement, if you can find one.
Fletcher never seemed to have an aptitude for business. By the late 20s, the band was at an artistic peak, but they were losing work. Then late one night in Kentucky, Henderson rolled his car, and his head was badly injured. His wife, Leora, said that the accident changed Fletcher, and that he got even more careless about business. He lost the band's regular gig at the Roseland Ballroom, and they spent long weeks on the road for little money, and this while they were making records that were maybe his best ever. Here, for instance, is the orchestra's version of Jelly Roll Morton's King Porter Stomp, arranged by Fletcher Henderson in 1932. Fletcher Henderson Orchestra performing King Porter Stomp. You're listening to a tribute to Fletcher Henderson on NPR's Jazz Profiles. I'm Nancy Wilson. The players in the band loved the group and the music, and they loved Fletcher. But things were getting impossible. The same gentle leadership that inspired his players to do their best made him a lousy manager of his own career. Weeks went by when the musicians wouldn't get paid. Finally, rather than have the orchestra fall away, piece by piece, Fletcher decided to disband the group altogether. Composer and jazz historian Gunther Schuller.
They all adored him because he was such a easygoing, nice man. He never bothered anybody. In fact, you know, as far as being a band leader and one who needed to keep his band in the forefront of this developing music, I mean, by the late 30s, there were hundreds of bands, many hundreds, and he could have stayed in the forefront. As we know, his bands tended to collapse for either economic reasons or lack of leadership or whatever. So he wasn't a very forceful person. But on the personal side then, I think a lot of people enjoyed being with him.
Benny Goodman heard the Henderson Orchestra and liked the arrangement so much that he brought Fletcher into the fold. By 1934, Goodman was already playing some 40 of Fletcher Henderson's arrangements and was asking for more. Goodman recorded Henderson's arrangement of King Porter Stomp in 1935. Benny Goodman skyrocketed to fame. He became known as the King of Swing, with a weekly radio show on CBS and throngs of teenage fans that packed his shows. Ironically, it was Fletcher Henderson's arrangements and big band concepts that helped get him there. Gunther Schuller.
It wasn't until Benny Goodman acquired Fletcher Henderson's compositions, let's not call them arrangements, they're compositions, which the Fletcher Henderson Band had developed in the late 20s, that he became the King of Swing. Benny Goodman was white, and when he played those arrangements, suddenly the white youth population and dancers and people like that suddenly discovered this music. But it wouldn't have happened except through the transfusion of Fletcher Henderson's compositions into the Benny Goodman Band. Fletcher Henderson's band had been swinging all along.
The swing era was coming alive. Hundreds of bands were springing up, imitating the style of the Benny Goodman Band, which was driven by Fletcher Henderson's arrangements. Albert Murray.
When jazz was a big popular fad in the 30s, which was sometimes referred to as a swing era, you see, these people were coming right out of Fletcher Henderson. You see, so if you deal with bands like Benny Goodman, that was Fletcher Henderson. Because he went in and rehearsed the band. The guy bought the arrangements. And then the arrangers studied his style. And then the other bands that were very popular during that time hired these arrangers.
With the success of Goodman's band, Fletcher decided to take another crack at leading his own orchestra. Rehearsed and ready, he roared back in 1936 with a hit recording called Christopher Columbus. The Fletcher Henderson Orchestra performing his hit composition, Christopher Columbus. At one point during Fletcher's comeback, Duke Ellington took him aside and urged Henderson to seize the moment, to go on the road and tour the band around the country. But Henderson dawdled, and the opportunity slipped away. Some of his best musicians quit in frustration. Finally, he disbanded the orchestra in 1939 and returned to Benny Goodman. As Horace Henderson recalls, Goodman was a demanding taskmaster.
Benny would think nothing of calling you up, man, 4 in the morning, telling you I got to have this by 10. It's a ranger's nightmare. I'd come in at our house, well, say 3:30 in the morning. I've been off for 2 hours, and there, poor Fletcher over the piano. Benny just called up and says, I need an arrangement for tomorrow morning for 9 o'clock. Poor Fletcher, and he's sitting up all night, man, and sleeping at the piano, you know, and this thing. And I'd take him up and help him undress. He's tired. And he says, I got to finish this by Benny. At least got to copy it. This is for 12 and 15 pieces we're talking about. Yeah, and they turn out to be good.
Fletcher Henderson put together another band during the early 40s, but by then he was the victim of his own successful formula. Hundreds of bands were now using the innovations and concepts he had pioneered with Don Redman. Jobs for the Fletcher Henderson Orchestra were scarce, and he couldn't attract the caliber of musicians he once had. The band folded again. By 1948, and with finances getting tight, he had come full circle. Fletcher was back on the road with Ethel Waters. While on tour, he became ill and returned to New York City to form yet another comeback band. The critics raved, but the people never came. A few weeks later, playing to an almost empty club, he collapsed, the victim of a stroke. He never worked again. 2 years later, he was gone. He was 55. Fletcher Henderson's funeral procession filled the streets of Harlem. It was the biggest anyone could remember. In tribute, Louis Armstrong sent a huge arrangement of flowers, sized and shaped like a grand piano. Fletcher Henderson was dedicated, gifted, and easygoing. But most of all, he was a pioneer. Together with Don Redman, he invented a new kind of orchestral music, the big band. Through his orchestra passed some of jazz's finest soloists, including Louis Armstrong, Coleman Hawkins, Benny Carter, Roy Eldridge, and Rex Stewart. And Fletcher, through his arrangements for Benny Goodman, helped give birth to the swing era. Today, his orchestra stands as one of the great artistic achievements of 20th century America, and his innovations of over 70 years ago are tightly woven into the fabric of American music. Our portrait of Fletcher Henderson was written and produced by Benjamin Shapiro. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Assistant producer is Madeline Smith. Our website coordinator, Bettina Owens. Executive producers, Mary Beth Kirshner and Murray Horwitz. Thanks to Columbia Legacy Records and the NPR bureaus in New York and Los Angeles. Thanks also to sources of archival interviews heard in this program, the Rutgers Institute for Jazz Studies, and the Louis Armstrong House and Archives. If you'd like to email us or find out more information about Jazz Profiles, this program, and the listing of future programs in the series, look for NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
NPR Music has a brand new website with jazz interviews and performances from around the country and throughout the years. Check it out at npr.org/music and click on Jazz in the upper right corner.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment, presenting the Irish rock film Once on DVD Tuesday.